This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. More and more women are ending up behind prison bars. They're going to the county jail, the state prison, and the federal penitentiary more frequently and in higher numbers than in the past. And this is particularly a problem in Texas. And when a woman is sent to prison, she faces a different set of problems than when a man is locked up. She frequently is a mother and has a history of trauma. Why are more women going to prison? What roles do poverty, domestic violence, addiction, and mental health play in this narrative? We ask you to call in. If you're a woman, you've had contact with the prison system, give us a call. We'd love to hear what you've seen. And what do you want us to know? Give us a call. 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined this afternoon by Lindsay Linder, a senior policy analyst with the Texas Criminal Justice Coalition. Carrie Aspinwall is investigative reporter for the Dallas Morning News. And we're joined by Gary Remy, professor at St. Mary's School of Law. And welcome, all of you. It's great to have you here this afternoon. Lindsay Linder, can you tell us about this phenomenon that we're seeing, that more and more women are ending up in prison?
Absolutely. Thank you, Dave, for having me today, and thanks for talking about such a critical issue. So female incarceration in Texas has increased substantially over the past years. The female incarceration in our Texas prison systems has increased 908% since 1980, and this is significantly more than the national increase in women's incarceration, which is already alarming at about 700%. And this is about twice the rate of men's incarceration in Texas. So women have been increasing doubly so in our prison systems. Women are also increasing in our county jails. Just since 2011, we've had a 48% increase in the number of women in our county jails. And I think it's really important to note that Texas has reduced its overall prison population in recent years with some criminal justice reform efforts that have allowed us to close multiple prisons. And we've seen about 8,577 men come out of the prison system, while during that same time period, we've actually backfilled with additional women, about 554 additional women. So it's clear that what we're doing in terms of criminal justice reform is not impacting women, and that's really one of the main reasons why we wanted to take a look at this issue.
So Carrie Aspinwall, investigative reporter at Dallas Morning News, how is it different when a woman is sent to prison?
You know, there's a lot of different factors. One of the main ones that seems to be really challenging, and this is sort of an issue dear to my heart because I've been covering it for the past year, is women are less likely to be able to afford their bail when they're arrested initially and put into jail. So very often they remain in the county lockup until they go to prison. And that's for a number of reasons. It's because they don't want to spend the money to get out because they have children at home, and they'd rather use that money toward feeding and caring for their children to family members that are helping them out. They're often starting with a lower salary and lower net wealth, especially African-American and Hispanic women. So they can't afford the fixed bail amounts that counties like Dallas County and Harris County have been using that can get really astronomical when you're talking about repeated offenses or minor offenses. So it puts you at a disadvantage even when it comes to criminal sentencing, because studies have shown that anyone who remains jailed until they go to prison is less able to participate in their own defense. They're more likely to take a plea deal and go to prison. And even down to things like probation, there have been many studies showing that probation, which, you know, we think of as a lifeline to folks to keep them out of prison, that the way it's set up, it kind of disproportionately favors men. It's set up and designed for men. It doesn't account for things like the transportation challenges, the child care challenges that women face. There are often requirements of probation, such as daily check-ins or weekly check-ins at a probation office where you have to go. And a lot of those places, they don't allow children, or women can't afford to bring their children with them, or don't have transportation to get there. So it makes it uniquely challenging, and there's been some interesting studies about those effects and why women seem to have a pretty high rate of failure out of probation. And what's interesting, Lindsay mentioned the significant rise in women. It was something we found through reporting at the Dallas Morning News since 2011, this 48% increase of women in county jails, that this is not reflective of a crime wave. Many people wrongly assume, oh, well, there's just more crime. But actually, the number of women getting arrested over that same period had dropped by 20%. So what we know is it's not part of a crime wave. So what is going on in the system that makes it so much harder for women to get out of it? To succeed at things like probation or diversionary sentences, because what we know is their numbers are going up disproportionately, while some of the significant male numbers are dropping.
Gary Remy, professor of law at St. Mary's University, talk about what this means from the law. The fact that more women are getting in, ending up in the courtroom, going to prison, how is that different?
I think there's no question that what Carrie was just describing is certainly the case everywhere throughout not only Texas, but I think throughout the country. Women are disproportionately impacted adversely by conditions of probation, by bail, and the whole bail system, which is, in my view, terribly flawed for everyone, but especially impacts women in a particularly bad way. There are social forces, of course, at work here, in addition to those within the criminal justice system. You have to remember that the criminal justice system, by and large, was designed for the male offender, not for females. The female population in the system in the past was much, much less than it is now. And that was true both regarding arrests and incarceration at the jail and at the state prison level. And so many of the procedures that are in place, many of the rules that are written, many of the ways in which things are done on a daily basis in our jails and prisons is done with a view toward men and not toward the special needs of women. So we now have more and more women coming into the system, a system that is really not designed for them. The bail system, the probation system, the system, frankly, of discretion for arrest, all of these things have changed since about the, I would peg it at about the early 80s, in ways that have disproportionately and adversely impacted women.
Women seems to be, whenever we have these issues, we talk a lot about who's the most vulnerable, who's being impacted hardest by certain things, whether it be mental illness, drug addiction, issues of poverty, and always that single moms rise to the top of the list and are frequently shown to be, this is a particular vulnerable segment of our population with so much potential, not because we're just talking about the mom, but also about the child that's involved. And so when a woman is impacted and comes in contact with law enforcement and goes to prison, then it seems like it's not just that individual, but an entire family system that's put in jeopardy. And so we're going to talk more about that when we come back from the break. What questions do you have about women in prison here in Texas? Why are so many of them ending up in prison? What are the gaps, the cracks that they're falling through, and how can we shore that up? And why is this a benefit to everyone to find out what's going on here? 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. More women are ending up in Texas prisons and jails. What led them there? Was this a breakdown in society? Is there something wrong with our criminal justice system? We're seeing women being impacted by poverty, domestic abuse, substance abuse, mental health. Those are all factors into what's happening here. What can be done in order to try to break this cycle and keep this from happening again and again and again? We invite you to call in. The number is 210-614-8980. Lindsay Linder with the Texas Criminal Justice Coalition. People may ask you right off the bat, why is this happening, and what do you tell them?
I think that there are a multitude of factors that have contributed to the growing rate of female incarceration. Poverty and unemployment, lack of education and stable housing, lack of treatment for mental illness, tough on crime prosecution of drug crimes, trauma, overly broad conspiracy and accomplice laws. The list just kind of goes on. So we conducted a survey of women in Texas's prisons, a really extensive survey, and we received about 438 responses back. And so it gave us a little bit of insight into the experiences of women in our Texas prison system. And some of the themes that really developed were exactly those factors that I mentioned. We found out that 52% of our respondents reported that their total household income before their incarceration was less than $10,000 a year. 81% of our respondents were parents, reported having children. The majority of them reported having been diagnosed with a mental illness. The majority of them reported having been sexually abused or assaulted as a child. And a shocking 82% of them reported experiencing domestic violence in their life. So just a plethora of challenges that are really facing this population. It's a particularly vulnerable population. And, you know, the vast majority of the women in our Texas prison system, about 64%, are there for nonviolent offenses. So you largely have a population that is there for drug offenses and what I believe is oftentimes self-medicating for trauma, because this population really does exhibit complex traumas, you know, one, two, three, even more traumas amongst the women that are in the system. And so I think that all of those things kind of combine to really put this population at risk and increase the likelihood that they're going to get swept up by our criminal justice system.
Carrie Aspinwall, investigative reporter for the Dallas Morning News. We have services and training available for many of the men who are in prisons. Are those same things available for women?
To an extent, there are some educational programs and classes, but a far reduced menu. It's like they were saying earlier, the prison system as a whole, the jail system, is designed for men. That's who we, you know, originally it was designed for dangerous, violent men that we wanted to keep locked up because that's what, you know, the majority of crime was committed by. And then slowly we began to incarcerate more nonviolent criminals and we began to incarcerate more women. But the prisons were never really, in many cases, redesigned to accommodate these populations, even the county jails. So there's fewer classes, fewer resources. It can be a struggle for the county jails and other places that are holding all these women to accommodate for their medical needs, their health needs, and to accommodate for their children. I mean, the Texas prisons are very far away from most major urban cities. And I've met children that have to travel 3 and 4 hours to go see their mothers in prison. And many times women don't get visited in the Texas prison system because their children are so far away and there's no one to bring them. There are some volunteer groups that help with the transporting of the children so they can go visit their moms. But it's a real burden on these families. And then many times in some county jails, they don't allow children younger than 18 to visit most of the time. They'll sometimes have a certain family visiting day. But a lot of times the children do not see their mothers while they're in jail.
So don't most women in Texas prisons go to Gatesville? Isn't that where the women's prison is?
Yeah, there are a number of facilities in Gatesville. And
that's west of Waco, but it's out pretty isolated.
It's very isolated. And you know, part of why I began looking into this issue was this connected issue for children with the jail and prisons. We were told by some sources that when mothers are initially arrested, there's no requirement on the part of law enforcement to ensure for the children's welfare unless the children are there or it's part of a child abuse arrest. The children can be elsewhere when mom is arrested, and they'll just have to, unless a family member steps in, often they're just on their own. So we did a project overlooked for the Dallas Morning News that looked at the safety and well-being of those children after a mother's arrest. And it was shocking what we found. many are handed off to an inappropriate guardian, or they end up living on friends' couches. So even when, you know, they're out there on their own taking care of themselves, just to go see mom, some of the kids we talked to, they hadn't seen their moms in months or years because they didn't have the resources or the transportation. Our story, Overlooked, followed a family of girls, and they live in Denton. So whenever they wanted to go visit their mother in Gatesville, it was, you know, a 3.5-hour drive almost.
So Gary Remy at St. Mary's School of Law, or do women take pleas, or more likely to take a plea bargain in order so they can be reunited with their children?
I think generally we don't understand how much pressure there is on all criminal defendants to accept a plea agreement. That is particularly true with women, more so with women even than men, although the pressure on both groups is very high. And the reasons for doing that are actually quite reasonable in some respects. The usual reaction when you say, well, people are pleading guilty to crimes they don't commit or crimes for which they have a good defense, the reaction from most folks is, well, no one would do that. You wouldn't plead guilty if you didn't do it. And actually, quite the opposite is true. People are lined up in every courthouse in Texas this morning pleading guilty to crimes that they either didn't commit or they have a good defense for, and women more so than men. The reasons for this have to do with a wide variety of factors, some of which, of course, are quite obvious. It costs less money, frankly. Money is important in the criminal justice system. We do provide appointed counsel for defendants who can't afford to hire a lawyer, but everyone, I think, would agree, given the opportunity, you would like to be able to interview and hire the attorney of your choice, somebody who's experienced, somebody who has an empathy with you and your kind of case. That doesn't happen for a lot of these women. For many women, the opportunity to perhaps accept probation and stay out of jail is just too attractive to pass up. And yet, it is so easy to have that probation revoked because of the conditions that are placed on women who go on probation. And because of primarily financial, but also because of other concerns, including, drug and alcohol abuse, mental health issues, and other things, women are very likely to violate the terms of probation and find themselves in jail. So it's easy to get into jail, easier even for a woman than for a man, easy also to try to avoid going to jail by accepting a plea agreement that the woman is, in many cases, unlikely to be able to meet.
Is justice being delivered equally to men and women? Is it harder for women? I mean, more easy to convict them and give them longer sentences? Or do we have any knowledge of that?
I think it's easier in the sense that the burdens on women are likely to push them in directions that make it more probable they will wind up in jail than for men. Some of that has to do with child care and child rearing. Women are very often the primary caregivers, not only for children, but for other family members. The wage disparity in our society between men and women puts women at a distinct disadvantage. And this works all the way from the bail system, which puts them in jail waiting trial. Imagine a woman who has been arrested and the bail is set at a relatively high amount, or maybe it's just the same amount as it would be for a man, but the woman simply doesn't have the resources to come up with the amount that would be necessary to pay for a surety bond and secure her release. And so she sits in jail for several months waiting for trial. She's then offered a plea agreement by a prosecutor that will give her probation and let her out of jail, or will allow her to plead to time already served. The problem with that is, either way, she's going to wind up with a conviction on her record. And a conviction is not anything that you want on your resume. This further disadvantages the woman who's looking for a good-paying job. So it's really just a trap everywhere you turn.
And Lindsay Linder, what more can you tell us about this survey that you took asking women about, you know, their conditions?
Yeah, absolutely. So we we asked really extensive information about conditions of confinement, and they, you know, had a lot to say because there are a lot of issues with conditions for women in the system, and I think they break down to a few different categories. I would say that healthcare was one area where there were really significant issues that women expressed. They expressed a serious lack of access to feminine hygiene products and things as simple as access to an adequate amount of toilet paper. They, you know, expressed that it's more than just a lack of those products. The lack of those products actually facilitates, you know, some serious self-esteem issues and makes them feel like they are really being stripped of their dignity. They also expressed, you know, some deterrence to care. For example, there's a $100 copay in Texas prisons that's required for certain types of kind of non-emergency healthcare visits, and a lot of women reported that you know, deterred them from seeking preventive medical care, which is, you know, very dangerous in an isolated environment where you have such a large number of folks in kind of a confined space. You want them to seek preventive care, so we were really concerned about that. We also found that there are really significant barriers to family unity for women in the system. One of those issues was the cost of phone calls. Texas actually ranks 47th in the nation in affordability of a 15-minute prison phone call. There are also, you know, barriers to visitation, such as what Carrie mentioned about extreme distances between where children might be living and where their parents are located. And it's often very expensive, even if you can find someone who's willing to drive the children hours and hours to visit their parents. And then those visitation settings are often not very child-friendly, especially when you talk about younger children. We also found, you know, problems with access to, you know, nutritional food and access to enough water and really basic things like that. There are just some really basic supports that women need in the system that aren't being met right now.
You said the $100 copay. So in Texas, since we didn't expand Medicaid, the Medicaid doesn't cover our prison population. Texas basically is supposed to be taking care of their medical needs as a state, and the state is charging them the $100 for that copay?
That's right. And in our conversations with the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, we've been told that they are open to possibly changing that. It would require legislation because that copay was instituted through legislation. But one of our recommendations to kind of mitigate the effects of that copay right now are to, rather than instigating a $100 copay for it's the first visit, triggers an annual copay of $100. And so that's a huge deterrent because it will come out of a woman's commissary if she has any commissary funds. And of course, you know, the women use those commissary funds that they maybe receive $20 or $30 from their family every month.
It's wired in.
Buy hygiene products and to buy, you know, basic necessities. And so the idea that money would be taken out to pay for their medical copay is a deterrent to them seeking care. And so what we've recommended is possibly breaking that up into, instead of an annual copay that's triggered, rather it would be a small copay that's triggered on a per visit basis. So maybe $3 or $5 per visit rather than a $100 trigger on the first one. And that's much more manageable by the average woman in the system who probably has very little access to funds.
It seems to be a deterrent to keep people from getting health care. We're going to go take a break. We invite you to call in 210-614-8980. What's it like to be a woman in the criminal justice system? Have you or a family member ever been to jail or in prison in Texas? We want to hear your story. You don't have to give your name. The number is 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Texas is seeing a sharp rise in the number of women who are going into the prison system. This is not Orange is the New Black. This is real life, where there are over 13,000 women currently in lockup in the Texas Department of criminal justice. What led them there, and what are the repercussions? What are the implications of having them there, away from their children, away from as when they were the primary caregiver? Did they get the justice that they deserved? We invite you to call in. If you've got a question or a comment, the number is 210-614-8980. What do you want to know about being a woman and being locked up in a Texas prison? And of course, if you've had any contact, if you're a woman and you had to go in behind bars, you don't have to give your name, but we'd love to hear your story. 210-614-8980. And Carrie Aspinwall, investigative reporter for the Dallas Morning News. What stories are you hearing from women who have gone through the Texas prison system?
Back to what you were asking, some of the differences between women and men, and if there were disproportions in sentencing. One of the things that I heard from women, I did a survey with looking at the issue of the children. I sent letters to women in prison and asked them about their experience when they were arrested. And, they, in addition to telling me about their children, they also told me about their experience with the criminal justice system. And some of the women told me that if they had children present when they were arrested or in their home, then they were charged with child endangerment, but not necessarily their spouse or partner or boyfriend who was also charged in the same crime. So it is interesting to see that, in terms of responsibility for the children or the child endangerment charge, that sometimes shows up on women's records, but not the men's. That was one thing I've seen. The other thing that really concerns me, especially from the county jail issue, there is somewhat of a drug treatment program at the state level. But what we know is that when women go to jail, often it's for an arrest that is related to their addiction, theft, drug possession, DUI, those kind of things. And when they're going to county jail, they can go into withdrawal and quite often do. And that was another thing that we looked at for the Dallas Morning News, a story called Unresponsive, where we found correlating with this increase of women in county jails, there was an increase in withdrawal deaths in the jails and drug-related deaths. There are some women who go in high and they die of an eventual overdose. But one of our stories looked at the death of a woman named Alicia Skeets here in the Dallas County Jail a couple years ago. She couldn't pay her cab fare. She'd gone to a methadone treatment clinic because she had been struggling with heroin addiction for years and was using methadone to treat that. She couldn't pay her cab fare. She got arrested for, it's a $60 offense that she couldn't pay. Theft of services. And, it was $60 cab fare she couldn't pay. Her card was declined. They put her in the Mesquite City Jail. And because she had unpaid court costs from another county, they moved her to Dallas County Jail. And while she was in Mesquite, they did give her a couple doses of her methadone that were on her when she was arrested. But when she went to Dallas County, for whatever reason, she didn't get any methadone. And then within a day or two, she died of withdrawal in the jail, which is a preventable death. She had declared it on her forms. And sadly, she was far from the only woman we found who had a case like that in Texas. I think Lindsay mentioned the high rates of mental illness. There were suicide deaths. There were things that, some people would look at and say could be preventable if there was better treatment from the point at which they are brought into the county jail.
So, if you do the crime, you do the time. That's just kind of the way it is. These people who break the law, go through the system, and they get convicted. They have every opportunity. They have defense attorneys and stuff. And if you're not guilty, you don't go to jail. We know that it's more complicated than that. But we also have to remember that, criminals, break the law and end up in prison. But are we missing opportunities to divert people away from prison who otherwise it would cost society more to put them in prison and then continue to do harm with their children in social services or not getting the social services that they deserve and things spin out of control? I mean, so Gary Remy, professor of law at St. Mary's University, is this being thought about at the level? Are there discussions with judges taking place? Are people being instructed that we need to have a different approach?
Oh, I think very much. And I think most lawyers and judges in the system are very supportive of the idea that we need more prevention in order to keep people out of the system to begin with. If we treat a lot of substance abuse problems as the medical issues that they are, instead of treating them as crimes, at least initially, I think we can save society tremendous amounts of money, and we can save the individuals a lifetime of being burdened with a criminal history that is only going to condemn them to further disadvantage in their life. We have a real problem once we get people inside prison in giving them the kinds of programs and treatment opportunities that they need in order to make a successful transition back into the civilian population. I think everybody is aware of that. And so we turn people loose with the same kind of substance abuse problems they had going into prison. Now they have the further disadvantage of having a criminal history, which is a real problem.
I'm going to go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. And Sue Ann has called in. Sue Ann, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. You know, over the years, I have always wanted to do prison work before women. And so when I asked at my church, they said, oh, yes, we do have it, but you have to go to Austin. And I'm thinking, Austin? And so, I mean, there's so much that we can do for women. I could come and teach yoga. The next person can come and do English as a second language. There is just so much, but I can't go to Austin. So I'm just wondering, why can't we help women here?
All right. Thank you, Sue Ann. So Lindsay Linder at the Texas Criminal Justice Coalition, this is something that's happening in the county jails as well. I know that the Bexar County Jail has seen a overpopulation of women, and they're looking for more women guards to come in and help them with that. But, you know, are there can people find the county jail as a place to try to help local women?
Absolutely. I think, you know, certainly there aren't programs currently that are really intentionally serving women in all county jails, but there should be. And there are, you know, programs that are doing really exceptional work across the state that just are really limited in their scope because of a lack of support. You know, they're small organizations. They don't have a ton of funding. They don't have a ton of public awareness about the work that they're doing. And that's one thing that we really tried to highlight in our report series was, you know, finding programs that are doing a really exceptional job serving women or serving children of incarcerated women and kind of elevating the work that they're doing so that those programs can either be supported or duplicated or, you know, connected to other services and resources. You know, there are great programs in Dallas that serve children of incarcerated parents. There are programs in Corpus Christi, you know, programs in kind of sporadically placed throughout the state. But I will say that what Gary mentioned was exactly right. This is to a very large extent, women are being pulled into the system as a result of what is a public health failure. We have failed to serve women in the community and address the root causes of what's really driving them into the system, things like substance use disorder and mental health issues and poverty-related circumstances. And so I think that it's so critical that we, at the legislative level, you know, at the highest level of our state, that we really shift from thinking about serving women within the system and instead really talk about a justice reinvestment that would take money out of our really, really bloated criminal justice system and instead send those dollars down to the county level where community programs and community supports can really address these women's root causes of their criminality and hopefully prevent women from ever having to come into contact with the criminal justice system in the first place.
But what are some real changes that can be made, laws, or what needs to happen, Lindsay, to help women so that they don't end up in a position where they have to go to prison?
Sure. So through our reporting, we really did develop kind of a three-tier recommendations. So the first is exactly what you're saying. It is so critical that we address the drivers of women into incarceration, and those, you know, are substance use, mental health issues, victimization, and poverty, just like we've mentioned. So, you know, talking about what could really be done specifically within that, one thing that we're really talking about is LEAD programs, which is law enforcement assisted diversion, which is based out of Seattle and has had really incredible results at diverting people away from the system. And it's particularly targeted towards folks with offenses like substance use, mental health issues, prostitution, these kind of public health issues that can better be served in the community and do not really warrant criminal justice system involvement. So LEAD is a really great alternative, and I think other things are, you know, just making the system more individually focused. So, you know, having intentional kind of gender-specific probation, where exactly what Gary mentioned earlier, where you have probationers that are empowered to treat individuals like individuals and acknowledge that it's going to be really difficult for a woman who has multiple children and she's the primary caretaker of those children to make regular probation meetings, to attend multiple classes, community service hours that constitute significant hours per week when she has to, you know, she's a primary caretaker of children and doesn't have any access to health care or any funds to, you know, purchase health, child care.
Sure. So women not only are some of the most vulnerable we have, but they're also being asked to do so much. And then when they come in contact with law enforcement, when they get into jail, it involves a lot comes crashing down. We're going to continue the conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. We're talking about women incarcerated in Texas. More and more women are finding themselves behind bars. These are also women who've dealt with a lifetime of abuse, mental illness, addiction, and poverty. All of these factors have made them some of the most vulnerable individuals in our society, and they find themselves sometimes face-to-face with a law officer, and they end up going to jail. What happens after that? What resources are available to help divert them from having a mark that will keep them from getting back into society? What happens to the rest of the family? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. So Carrie Aspinwall, investigative reporter for the Dallas Morning News, I can't help think that the opioid crisis that we're having in the state is part of this. I mean, what do you see?
It definitely factors in, and that you get people who weren't addicted to what you think are traditional street drugs, or people who began with prescription opioids and then transitioned into traditional street drugs.
Because I've read that women are more likely to become addicted now than men. They're being overprescribed for opioids, and that then they find themselves addicted.
I've seen studies like that too, and I don't know exactly statistically, are more women in for opioid-related offenses or for traditional heroin, meth? I mean, Texas, unlike some of the states on the East Coast that have huge opioid overdose death numbers, Texas isn't quite as bad in some of those areas. We're still very bad for meth and meth-related arrests and convictions and offenses. Like a lot of the southern states, Oklahoma and Missouri are also bad for this. It's still very prevalent here. I was surprised when I surveyed these women about their children, how many of them were still going to jail for meth-related offenses. And we have seen that in some data regarding arrests and overdose deaths as well. It's usually in a combination with other drugs. Women are quite often, from what I've seen, polypharmacy addicts. Just sort of whatever, you know, they can afford at the time. And that's maybe why meth is so prevalent among that population, because it is kind of a cheap drug. It is a drug still of the working poor. A lot of I went to the Burnett County Jail, Burnett, kind of out by Austin over there.
Yep.
It actually had one of the largest spikes in female population, partially because they were housing for so many other rural county jails. They had all this space from when they were a private prison contractor, and the county just decided, well, we'll make some money by housing all the female offenders that other counties don't have room for. And a lot of the women I met down there were still addicted to meth, and they were in for arrests that were very much related to their addiction.
Back to the phones with Kathy, and the number is 210-614-8980. Kathy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank y'all so much. I was wondering, I haven't heard the topic addressed yet. I'm a formerly incarcerated battered woman who works with creating education about wrongful arrest of battered women for self-defense and defending their kids, and on the need for clemency for the women who are in there. I was wondering if the speakers today could address this issue, because it's a 90% of the increase in violent female felons is due to wrongful arrest and the labeling of aggravated assault and such for lawful self-defense.
So, Kathy, you ended up going to jail, to prison?
Yes.
Well, where did you go?
Where did I go? To prison.
To the state prison?
Yeah, the TDCJ.
Wow. How long did you have to stew?
More than 9 years.
Wow. Is there anything you want to tell us about, you know, what needs to change? What do you want us to know?
All of the above. So first, there's a problem in the whole community not really taking the issue of battering seriously, which I think we can see when an issue like mass shootings come up, and it's clear the root is a teenage male who somehow has learned male privilege, where he believes he can handle his emotions by killing the female who has burnt him and then shooting other people. But then with the onset of mandatory arrest policies, where the law was supposed to take this seriously, then you get a gender bias misapplication of the law to where, for example, here in the San Antonio area, according to Project Advance at the Peace Initiative, 50% of the time on a domestic violence call, the police, approximately 50%, the police are arresting the battered woman who has lawfully defended herself, and we have a self-defense waiver. We have a defense of third-party waiver. So those laws are there, so proper enforcement of them would be great. And the Peace Initiative actually has a jail diversion program, which I believe is like a LEAD program that Lindsay was discussing. We have a unique program here in the city, actually, that diverts. And when people successfully complete that program, they continue to have wraparound services. But stopping the arrest in the first place would be good. But once you get into that system and you're in the jails, and I could spend hours talking about what's wrong with the local jails in the state, but let alone the prison system, then there's the problem of needing, you know, so the assumptions are that the representation is there, but attorneys don't
right.
seem to understand the self-defense waiver, and instead they psychologize or psychiatrize and want to slap a diagnosis on women, which is, I think, is a problem of the inclusion of some of the language of the mental health system, because when the laws were created, the SCR 26 was created back in the 90s
yes.
By Toby Myers and things like that.
Okay. So, Kathy, thank you for that interesting take on, you know, what is this self-defense waiver? So, Gary Remy, professor of law at St. Mary's University. What is a self-defense waiver?
Well, you really have to understand the entire self-defense structure in Texas criminal law, which we don't have time to go into.
But is there anything that particularly helps women in a battered environment?
Women in a battering environment certainly have the opportunity to avail themselves of self-defense. The problem with self-defense laws typically around the country, including in Texas, are that those laws require you to show, not require the defendant to show, but in essence, the practical burden falls on the defendant to show that it was immediately necessary to use a certain level of force and not some other force.
So that's going to take a defense strategy. You need a full-time paid defense attorney to do something like that.
You really do, and you need somebody to present what's called battered spouse syndrome testimony to explain to a jury and help them understand how women get trapped in this cycle of abuse and why they might have acted in the way that they did.
Lindsay Linder at the Texas Criminal Justice Coalition, women who are abused, domestic violence, they defend themselves. Do they sometimes end up going to prison doing time, like we heard from Kathy?
Absolutely. And, you know, One of the things that we found in connecting with all sorts of service providers and formerly incarcerated women, one thing that I heard over and over and over again was that so many women are in this system as the result of a relationship that involved some sort of abuse or kind of coercion, trafficking, something like that. It's a huge issue that really pulls women into the system, and it's something that we need to look into much, much more, and there needs to be much more data on it and much more action on it. So, Kathy, please do get in contact with me. I'd love to talk more about this.
Right. So, and let's go to another caller. This is Barry. Barry, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. I was wondering, I've got this lady that's coming to San Antonio from Nevada. She's in prison there now. She'll be getting out in a couple of months. She's taken courses in prison there. And what kind of chances does she have of getting a job in San Antonio?
Okay, Barry, thank you for the call. So Lindsay Linder, Texas Criminal Justice Coalition, getting a job when you get out, what's that like?
It's hard. It's really hard. There are significant obstacles facing both men and women coming out of the system in terms of employment and housing. Both are huge issues. I will say that one thing that I think makes it particularly difficult for women coming out of the system with employment is, number one, that they oftentimes are, taking back custody of the minor children, and so you have, to wrangle with what's going to happen to them. If you're going to work, you need to be able to find daycare for them and be able to afford that. So that's a huge issue. And then another issue is that while they're in the Texas prison system, most of the educational and vocational programming and training that's available is geared towards really male-dominated industries. You see a lot of electrician and carpentry and construction and
welding
and things like that. In welding, that's exactly right. And not to say that women can't do anything that they put their minds to, because they absolutely can, but the chances that women are interested in those types of employment and then that they're going to be able to be hired, these male-dominated industries are just, you're not looking to hire a bunch of women to, for your construction site. It's just not typically going to happen. So I think we need more gender-specific vocational programming for women that's just more practical in terms of what women are really going to be seeking in terms of employment once they're out.
Carrie Aspinwall, investigative reporter, Dallas Morning News. Of course, the headline describes you, more women going into the prison system, and you say, wow. But we, as we've seen through this hour-long conversation, this is complicated. So what needs to be the sub-headline? What do people need to know, after that?
It is complicated. You're right. I think when they realize that it's not part of a crime wave, like I think you were saying earlier, people in Texas especially, they tend to think, well, if you do the crime, you got to do the time. But the problem is, when we're talking about county jail, those people haven't been convicted yet. They're still technically what we call pretrial. They have the right to be assumed innocent until they're proven guilty in a court of law. And I think people forget that sometimes, and they forget that as taxpayers, we're all paying for this system. So even if you don't feel tremendous sympathy for these women and their children, this is your tax money. So do you want it to be spent smartly on a system that works, or on a system that just has a revolving door where people go in and they never come out, and you're just paying to reincarcerate them over and over again? And as a consequence of that, you're paying to put their children in foster care or for their kids to live on the streets. So I think people really need to think hard about the way their money is being used in this system, and if they want it to work better, and what could it be doing better for women?
All right. Carrie Aspinwall, investigative reporter, Dallas Morning News. You also heard from Lindsay Linder, senior policy analyst with the Texas Criminal Justice Coalition. Gary Remy is here, professor with St. Mary's School of Law. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.